And good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is, once again, not Scotty Hertz. He remains in the United Kingdom, in the British Isles. Last I heard, he's looking for Excalibur now, so he may or may not be King of England now. I don't know how that works. But we will carry on with Open Sources stuff, which is, of course, CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. So today, later in the show, I'll be talking to Cornelis Clevering. He has run in the past for the Marijuana Party of Canada here in Guelph, and I am sure he is going to have some thoughts and opinions about what is going on concerning legalization of marijuana and everything that's been going on, the proposal from the Ontario government about having basically LCBOs for marijuana. So we're going to get his opinion on everything that's going down concerning marijuana. But our first guest, I'm sure he has thoughts about legalized marijuana. He's not why he's here today. But it might come up. You never know. I try not to plot out these conversations so carefully. But James Gordon, Ward 2 Councillor of Guelph, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
You were chuckling there, so I am not. If you caught that, that was James. Enjoying very much being back at CFRU. You were talking about having show here in the 80s.
That's it.
And we were also talking about how all your CDs remain forever in the archives, because we still do take CDs here, surprisingly.
I couldn't. See, that's the generation difference. I gave up my show in the 80s because I couldn't make the transition from vinyl to CDs.
Yeah. But we still have the vinyl.
That's
right. And of course, it's back.
Coming back
in a big way. I actually want to ask you about that. You know, your summer vacation, because you still do the touring. You still make the rounds.
Sure.
The James Gordon Live Show.
Yeah, and it's nice to switch hats. And I never really thought, you know, someone, maybe you could have told me when I got this city councilor gig, it's ostensibly a part-time job.
Yeah.
And it takes over pretty quick. So I think the last few months I said, you know what, I've got to make it part-time myself for the part-time pay. So I've been out touring a little more than usual the last while.
Where have you been going?
I went down to the Maritimes in the summer, and I was down the Midwestern United States in the spring. I sort of do one little tour a season, I guess, now, and then one-offs. I've got some stuff around Southern Ontario and one jaunt to the States this fall, but not too much. And it comes at a time when we were just hinting at it before, where a smaller presence in the music business comes at a time when there is a smaller music business. There's more music, but less revenue, so it makes it tough.
Yeah, and if you want to make that revenue, you have to be live and in person.
Yep.
People, because you can't get music anywhere, so you can't get James Gordon live and in person anywhere. You have to, when he comes to your town, you have to go.
You must.
I wanted to address a couple of things briefly, not necessarily specific to, well, it's specific to council because you're on city council, but just generally speaking, you've been fairly involved in talking about the news drought in town. I mean, if there is such a thing, you were at a symposium over the summer, and we were talking about that before the show, so... Why? First of all, I think a lot of people might be aware that Simon Horse from The Globe wrote a big center spread piece, and I think it was in July about it as well. But I think, first of all, you represent a ward where there's a lot of seniors.
Correct.
So this hits them particularly hard. Yeah. But in terms of life without a newspaper, because... And I've been saying this to people and talking about the issue. The daily newspaper, unless something really, really miraculous happens, probably isn't coming back. So
I would think that's true.
In terms of how you know, people you know and tough talk to dealing with it, and what you're talking about when people ask for your input on this issue.
Yeah, Well, I find it was kind of news to me, not to make a pun about news, but there was a sense of grieving around the loss of a daily newspaper here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in some ways, I grieved it, but I wasn't a subscriber. I wasn't doing my bit.
Like right.
It all hit us quickly that we... it's just that's the correlation with the music business. If you aren't supporting artists, they can't do their job. If you don't, and you know this, if you don't support journalists, they can't do their job. And in both those fields, there is a growing expectation that we should get that information for free.
Right.
And you know, we need to find revenue sources to keep the quality of the journalism up. But I think attached to that grieving was, okay, here's something that we were used to for, 150 years in
yeah.
the town. What's filling that vacuum? And at that symposium I went to, I think that was the biggest concern, is that there are things trying to fill that void, but are they reliable? Are they truthful?
Mm-hmm.
Do they actually represent the diversity of the community that we live in?
Right.
Or are they... aimed at an extremist point of view that people might drift towards because they can't find anything else.
Right.
So it skews everything quite a bit, I think.
And it's not just, you know, I think people point to, you know, things online or, you know, Facebook and things like that as people being driven astray, yep. Journalistically speaking. But it also happens from the other side because people do put faith in the institutions and yep. the media outlets that have been around for decades. But we're seeing that in the United States where there's all these local TV stations yep. are being bought up by this one company
right.
that has a very specific editorial point of view
yep.
as well. So it's coming in from both ends.
Mm-hmm. So Guelph is, I was talking about it on council just last week, how I think we pride ourselves in sort of being a go local
right.
community. And so there's the hope that we can go local with the media too,
mm-hmm.
but is there a way to make that sustainable? And that's still, there are models around, and at that symposium at Ryerson, there were people that had best practices where they were actually making community newspapers happen,
mm-hmm.
whether it's an actual piece of paper or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're in a real state of flux with that, but I'm hoping it lands somewhere where we can find trusted, real news and also keep it regular. I know you're doing a great job in town to try to, you know, be, we were talking about that before we started, that you want to be there for whatever happens.
Right.
And so if we know that you're there, whenever happens, we'll go to look for that with you.
Right.
And I think you've established yourself as someone that does offer an impartial perspective. But if you're just looking for stuff, I can imagine it would be hard to tell if that.
Yeah. You have to build that reputation. That's not something you can just like go, hey, come to my site. I'm the most honest and trustworthy yeah. news source in town. Yeah. You have to prove it every day.
And the other strange thing I've noticed, Adam, and you probably have too, that when you shift to an online news presence,
mm-hmm.
there's such a sense of immediacy, and it happens mm-hmm. with everything. People aren't waiting before they press that send button.
Yeah.
Like if you were writing a letter to the editor, you'd sit down with a piece of paper or you'd type it out and you'd mail it in. But if there's a story in an online publication, within minutes, there's the stuff that's there. I don't know why it's skewed that way, but it's usually, it can be really brutal.
Mm-hmm.
It can be really right wing. I don't know where left wingers, why they're slower on the mark, but there seems to be a kind of demographic that wants to respond in that angry, immediate way.
Sure.
And they're out there first then.
Yeah.
So that's what we often think, oh, maybe that's what the news actually is,
mm-hmm.
but it's not. So we have to find a way to spread that around a little bit.
I believe Simon got to that conclusion that I'm perhaps not angry enough to be sustainable.
Oh.
I'm not sure if that's what he meant, but
yeah.
That's what I took from it.
yeah.
But I mean, yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see what happens. But you know, you're doing your part to address that kind of disinformation with you and Phil with your breezy
sure.
breakfasts.
Sure.
And
yeah,
that's,
I think so.
That's enormously successful.
It is. Really had a big crowd this morning, actually.
You had a big guest, Derek Thompson.
yeah. And it's interesting, after this morning's meeting, people are saying to me, well, how do we get more of this? Like,
right.
Are other counselors going to do it? Or are we going to find different venues? Because the city, I don't know if this will come across as a criticism or not, they're pretty big on public engagement, but the formats for that public engagement often are formal or kind of static and not,
right.
People don't feel that it's interactive and they don't feel that their particular voice can be heard. It's more of a, okay, here you're receiving information. And we sense, this is not a pun either, with the breakfast, there's a hunger for that kind of thing.
There's a literal and figurative hunger.
That's it, yeah.
I do wonder that because I it's something we hear a lot, and it's something we see a lot too. You know, it reminds me of what happened at the planning meeting this week, where you get this influx of people who are like, "I found out this yesterday. They're going to build like a 12-story tower next to my house."
Right.
And it's hard to put the blame on anyone because I think the city certainly does its due diligence by putting those full page ads in the Trib. You know, you got your Twitter, you got your Facebook, the website. It's still hard to reach people.
Sure.
There's more channels than ever, but it feels like it's harder and harder to reach people.
I'll get angry constituents saying about something in their neighborhood, like they're paving the street. They say, I didn't know about this. And I'll say, you know what? I'm pretty sure a piece of paper was dropped in your mailbox, but it gets dropped in the mailbox with all the other junk.
Right.
And it gets thrown out by a lot of people. And then it's not the city's fault that they didn't read it, but that was the... You know, they're trying the different methods, and some of them aren't sticking.
Yeah. Perhaps sticking the thing right to the doorbell last night.
That's it.
I wanted to talk to you about the library is on the agenda for the coming Monday meeting.
That's right.
It seems like there's some changes to the business plan of the library, and you're on the library board, so you're the person to ask about this. So
sure. I think where that's at is there was a realization from the library and the library board itself that to move forward with a new main library and a new plan to address our growing community, there needed to be a really solid business plan. I think what we had before was more of a wish list, dream. You know, here's what we think we need. But the business plan's going a little bit deeper, and there was an outside KPMG, an outside consultant firm hired to try to firm up this plan so that it was bulletproof, really, so that anybody, whether they use libraries or not, can see the economic value in it, the social value in it, the return in it. I think that's been a huge thing. Anything cultural, I've found, because I come from the cultural sector, it was a shock to me to arrive in council, and that every time that something cultural comes up, some would consider it, that's an expense, and that we won't see anything back from, when it's an investment in our future. And there's lots of ways that we see an economic return, even if it's just having a healthier population that isn't in the hospital as much. You know, there's all those little things, but there actually is straight dollars. There's lots of communities that are building vibrant community hub libraries that you can actually show that for every dollar you invest in that sector, you can get two back by whenever people are coming downtown, they're going to the restaurants, they're taking transit if the transit coincides with it, so they're lowering our footprint that way too, and there's so many benefits, but I don't think they've been all gathered and put together in a format that can be understood and be clear to everybody. So that's what we're working on now.
Okay. Because I don't know if you've noticed this, but I'm not sure if I wrote about it or if I might have been with the podcast I did with Steve Kraft, but you don't see as many people complaining about the library anymore. There used to be a constituency as like, we're still paying for a library.
Right.
And I think that's, if it's not gone, it's gone way underground.
Yeah.
But it's because I think our library's done a very purposeful thing, which is it's not just about borrowing the books or borrowing the magazines. It's, you know, here's a 3D printer.
Yep.
Here's VR you can access. Here's, you know, just computer access generally, just having access to the internet.
Sure.
That's not...
You're right. Shifting it from it's about books.
Right.
That was ammunition for people that said, well, I don't read books. I've got my iPad. And so why should my tax dollars go for it? But we're starting to the messaging is shifting so people understand the value of it. And I think the biggest value that we can offer this community is, what's the expression they use, the third space? You know, it's it's not your home, but it's not a commercial coffee shop. It's a place that anybody can hang out. I saw a statistic last week that they don't have an equivalent for Canada, but in the States, they've shown that the two biggest users of libraries now, we would think, oh, it's old librarian types.
Yeah.
It's millennials and the homeless.
Right.
And we want to have a welcoming space that doesn't matter who you are. And I can't think of an equivalent in our society, even. Like, the library is being recognized. Doesn't matter who you are. You can come, you can be safe, you can find information, you can share it. Can be a social experience, learning experience. And I don't think, since I can't think of another equivalent to that, that's accessible to everybody, obviously that's a need that needs to be filled. And we have to fill it in a way that meets the future growth predictions. And that's the only sticky point left, I think, with our growing a library, is we've been mandated by the Places to Grow Act to grow by 40,000 people or something?
Yeah.
And do we build a library that meets our current population, or do we do one that meets a 160,000 person city? And we'd be missing an opportunity if we didn't do that.
Yeah.
But that's still, it's a bigger initial investment, not an expense. So some would say, well, that's, yeah, we know we need a library, but does it have to be that big? And I'd say, probably does.
Well, I know space is an issue.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much, you know, stuff, not just the books, the DVDs, the CDs, video games.
Yeah.
It's books on tape.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and again, that computer access, you know, if you want to have more space from, you know, if you go into the main library any day of the week, all those computers, I have somebody
for sure.
Yeah. On them for sure.
And I would also say I'm a library nut. Wherever I go, I go to the library, and I always come home and feel embarrassed.
Mm.
Like, we have a library that hasn't grown in 40 years, and the population has tripled since then. And you go to other places that are building these beautiful, vibrant spaces, and we go, well, what's the matter with us? And but I'm really appreciating you saying, you know, that you think that's shifting a bit. So we understand the value. The next battle is, how do we do it? How do we pay for it? And what's the scale of it that makes sense for this city?
And it's worth noting, while the main library itself hasn't grown, the system has certainly grown.
That's right.
Because they
have six branches.
They've added the East End and the Westminster Library in the last few years. So the other big issue, not that the library is necessarily a big issue, but to some people, certainly. But there was a special meeting last night on GMHI, and there was that amendment made to the GESI board. The city councilors will not be sitting on the board until whatever happens, so to speak. But what I wanted to talk about was merger, because that was what was discussed in the closed section of the meeting.
Yeah.
But appreciating that you cannot lawfully say anything, but in terms of, you know, what people can maybe look towards about the possibility.
Well, I think what I can speak to is that we passed a motion in the spring that said, whatever happens, we ain't selling that thing.
Right.
So sale is off the table. Stand alone, stay the way we are, or merge is still on the table. And what you'll see coming out through the public engagement process and meetings coming forward soon is a healthy discussion about what those other two options look like. And I'm fascinated by it, because that whole industry and that whole sector is changing so quickly with disruptive technology. It's hard to keep track of. So I'm learning a lot, because I've actually mentioned in another interview that, well, even in this one, I said, you know, we're a go local kind of town.
Yeah.
So there is a certain pride in staying local in things, and I appreciate that, and I see the value of it. But the business case, again, for what would happen, the merger, another way of looking at mergers to me is almost like we would be members of a co-op.
Right.
Because we would be combining resources with other communities. And for some, there's a fear. Well, what could that do? And for others, there's a sense of excitement about whether that would allow us to address these shifting technologies and our shifting needs. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. And just like you said about the library, I think we have to shift quickly in this community to find out how do we get that. You know, we're all pretty keen in this town about renewables and innovation. Can we keep that under the structure we have? And if we can, let's make sure we do. If we need to look for another kind of structure, let's be open to it and see what's possible.
Well, it almost ties up a lot of things we were talking about in terms of the local centricity of Guelph.
Yes.
and the looking to the future. And I think it was you and communications as well I was thinking of, because it was you and Andy and your ward mate Andy Van Hellman who probably said the two most insightful things, I thought, in the earlier debate, which was you making the point that people in Guelph still think like we're a small town. It's a growing city, but they still think we're a small town. So having the local utility, calling it Guelph Hydro, straight up, owned by the city, means a lot to people.
Sure.
And then how Andy characterized it, it was, I think, to put it simply, was like, what the hell are we talking about? Which was, you know, a lot of people, and he phrased it like, I've been a Guelph Hydro customer for decades. I pay their money. I get the service I want. I get great service.
Yeah.
What's the problem? And I think that, you know, when it came to the selling portion of it, that was where people felt concerned. It's like, well, Guelph Hydro's doing a great job.
Why fix something that isn't broken? And I'm learning the hard way. I think it's been quite a learning experience that, okay, it doesn't look broken now, but if we're being visionary about what might be coming down the pipe with it, we have to prepare and we have to be ready in a way that's going to be sustainable and resilient for us, and we'll just have to see.
I want to use that as a segue too for the service reviews, because this is another area that's coming up on Monday's meeting of whether or not city employees should be worried that their jobs are going to become privatized.
Right.
Because I think the report came out last week, and Mark was on just after the report came out, and the report, I think, was fairly good news for the city, that five out of six of the areas that were investigated show that the city is, on average, doing as well as any other municipality. I think there's some, and I kind of addressed this on my Guelph Today column, that there's a lot of concern that there's something ideological at work, too.
Yes.
So in terms of whether or not you think workers should be worried about this. Because I think people see you as a friend. You go to a labor picnic every year, sometimes staying at the labor picnic. So
I'm a union member.
But
I personally, looking around the horseshoe, don't think there would be the vote to go down that road. And I also think it's nice, the synchronicity of these conversations we're having, that I think that there was... There used to be some models you can look at and say, well, if we privatize that, we'd save your tax dollars and the rates might go down. But I'm not seeing them. I think we can look at a lot of places that have tried that, and it works the opposite, because there'll be an initial period. Don't even get me started on Uber, but there's a model there where you make it enticing, you make it attractive, appealing. It looks like a good rate, and then the wages go down and the rates go up. And also you lose municipal control over just the way a private corporation does the business. So I think, you know, it would be privatized over my dead body, really. Maybe Andy's. He's older. I don't know.
Oh, my goodness. Shall we get Andy on the phone to get a media comment?
But I can't see the value in it. And you're right, it's ideological. There are some that, no matter what you look at, still hope for just smaller government, and that's a way to get that. But I think that this community, I don't think, has the appetite for that.
Fair enough. I think we could go on and on. I have several questions more, but unfortunately we are running out of time. So, James, if people want to find you on the internet to carry on the conversation, how can they find
you? They can go to my Ward 2 blog, which is called The Deuce, and they can find me on Facebook and Twitter. On Twitter, I'm That James Gordon, because there was a few of us, it turns out. And I'm just James Gordon on Facebook.
Including Gotham City's commissioner.
I know. And then my other life as a huge international rock star is jamesgordon.ca.
Great. Because, you know, it's funny, and I'll do this a little aside, but I do occasionally have to look up something you've said previously. And so I'll just Google straight James Gordon.
Oh, yeah, and you get the
and
commissioner.
The first 20 posts are commissioner Gordon related, and it's like, oh, yeah.
If only that was a gig in Guelph I could apply for.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. But James Gordon, thanks so much for coming by. Great. And we will see you again.
Great chatting.
And that is going to be a break for us here on Open Sources Guelph, and we will be right back with our next guest. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Another breath and I'm up another level. It feels good to be up above the clouds. It feels good for the first time in a long time now.
And that was Sir Sly with the opening ditty from their 2017 album, Don't You Worry, Honey. The track was called High, and it demonstrates my enormous non-creativity when it comes to programming the music for this show, that I just Googled High song, and this is what I got. But the reason we're talking about getting high is my guest today, or my second guest today, I should say, Cornelis Clevering, who has run on many occasions as the Marijuana Party candidate for the city of, or for the riding of Guelph, I should say. So there has been a lot of news about legalization lately, so I thought I would get an expert opinion. Brother Case, how are you doing today, sir?
Good, Adam. Glad to be here.
Are you laughing about? Are you just glad to be here? Or are you laughing at me calling you an expert?
No, I'm laughing because I'm drowning under a bill of 45. It's got over 226 pages. You know.
Yeah, well, that's a good place to start because I don't think we've had you back since this was announced. It was earlier this summer. So when I know you've been highly critical of, you were highly critical during the election of the Liberals and their promise. You know, mostly because Justin Trudeau is, and I think you've made several jokes at his mother's expense, or you had partaken in marijuana and had not suffered the consequences that thousands of other people have suffered in terms of legal action. But when you first heard this news and the proposal, what were your thoughts?
Well, you know, first of all, you hand the portfolio over to Bill Blair, the narc. I remember him from G20 with his, he kettled all those demonstrators. So there he is.
Yes.
And Justin puts him in charge, and Anne McGlennon. Now, you might remember her from the days of Paul Martin. She was the minister of health and welfare. Mm-hmm. And she had this avid hatred towards, like, the use of cannabis. So that's good. You know, let's put the portfolio in the hands of a narc and a former minister of health and see what comes up.
Could have put it in the hands of Rona Ambrose, I'm just saying.
Or Mark Emery.
Mark Emery. This has sort of been formalized and put in the hands of the provinces, and we have that outline now as well, that basically is going to be 100-some-odd marijuana-centric stores, sort of like an LCBO for pot. And I know that there has been a lot of criticism, including local criticism, that this cuts out the people who were basically keeping the flame alive, the small businesses with their head shops, you know, basically trying to make the business case, which is sort of the only case I think that has been listened to on this matter, that, you know, you can make a successful enterprise out of selling recreational marijuana. And now that's sort of been taken away from them, too, and put in the hands of another Crown Corporation, or at least that's the plan.
Well, okay, so they're still working on that. Now,
right.
The province, first of all, let's be clear. This is still a federal jurisdiction, okay?
Right.
It's still federal health, and it's still considered a health issue if you're, like, enslaved and smoking marijuana every day, then, like, you've got a health problem. It's not a criminal problem. Certainly, it's certainly not provincial jurisdiction. But, okay, now we're into selling marijuana, like, 5 grams or less, 30 grams personal possession. And the provinces are saying, well, you know, we want a part of the action. So every province can put together their own regulations. So in the case of Ontario, yes, I think it's, what, 40? You said 100 LCBO outlets that will be carrying medicinal marijuana, just marijuana,
mm-hmm.
recreational marijuana.
You're right. Is that the way this should go? Because I'm kind of of two thoughts of this. I do sympathize for the independent guys.
Well, I'm glad you do, because there's some issues there.
Right, and I completely get their point about, you know, they've been on the forefront and they should get first crack, because they, you know, they still feel the hammer. And actually, in a way, Kathleen Wynne's announcement has, you know, given the green light to the chiefs of police in Ontario, police officers, to hit that hammer more on these guys, because in a year they will have to be out of business because it's going to be an LCBO gig. But on the flip side of it is, this is a new direction. This is something that is going to shake the system to a degree. You know, this isn't the first idea a lot of people had to legalize marijuana. So what about incrementalism, you know, sort of letting people get used to the idea of legal pot?
Okay, well, first of all, like I said, Bill Blair's fingerprints are all over this Bill C-45. So if you think, you know, we're moving towards legalization, give your head a shake. This is only for 30 grams or less. And, you know, you were saying something about the little guy. Well, the mm-hmm. first thing that happens in the, like, the real market, the underground market, is they keep the prices down low.
Right.
There's competitive markets, you know, people providing a product that other people want. So when it goes to the LCBO, well, what prices are they going to charge?
Mm.
You know, I suppose enough to keep, like, the underground guys out. Well, how do you establish that? Look what's happened in the medicinal marijuana situation.
Mm-hmm.
These big multinational corporations set prices anywhere from 8 to 12 grams. And so why? Because it's so highly regulated, no one else can get into it, that eventually the prices are way astronomical for people that need it for medicinal purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It was far better before. It was cheaper, $4 or $5 a gram. The stuff is grown outdoors, not indoors, not laced with pesticides. This stuff is poisonous, and they have a license to kill. It's called marijuana. I don't believe it really is. It's some kind of indoor clone version of the real thing, and that's mm-hmm. what you're going to get at the LCBO.
That's interesting. There's so many interesting directions I can go into, but what I think is interesting is that you agree with some of the cynics. This does not make the criminal sale. This does not make the criminals who traffic in pot go away. This is creating, I hate to phrase it this way, but kind of like the Dollarama version of this, where you can go to the winners, you can go to the JCPenney and get the top shelf marijuana from the LCBO, or you can still go to your local dealer who's going to give you stuff, and it's going to be markedly cheaper, even though it's still technically illegal.
Yeah, you know, this is the idea that they're going to legalize marijuana simply isn't true. It's becoming far more restrictive under Bill C-45. It's called the Cannabis Act. And so if you've got 30 grams or more, you're facing 14 years in jail. And it used to be a provision under the old Controlled Drugs and Substance Acts where anywhere from anywhere from 30 grams to 3 kilos, you got 5 years or less. Mm-hmm. After 3 kilos, you were facing life. That's currently what it is.
Right.
So if the new act gets passed, you're facing a maximum of 14 years. Okay. Now, there's another provision. There is a ticketing provision, which starts at 50 grams or less. So if you're walking around and you got more than 30 grams, guess what? The cops can ticket you. I think it's $200. However, there's a caveat. It's illegal after 30 grams. So no matter if you've got 50 grams or less, you know, it's up to the discretion of the police to give you
right.
a ticket. Uh-huh. So what happens if you got more than 50 grams? Well, now all of a sudden you're looking at 14 years in jail.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's legal?
Right.
What part of it is legal? Hey, it gets worse. Look, there is a Division 2 of the Act says this. I can't even be here with you today if this Act passed because it says I cannot promote. It's section on promotion of cannabis. It says here, section 17.1E. Okay, here's what the Act reads. By presenting it, I'm talking about cannabis,
right.
or any of its brand elements, like hash, in a manner that associates it or the brand element with or evokes a positive or negative emotion about or image of a way of life, such as one can include glamour, recreation, excitement, vitality, risk, or daring. So if I say to you, smoking cannabis is good for your health and it expands your consciousness, the RCMP is going to be knocking on the door because mm-hmm. I can't do that anymore.
Okay. Well, first of all, that's messed up.
It's really messed up.
Well, it also sounds like what they've done with cigarettes. It kind of sounds like the same thing. You can't do an advertisement anymore where someone's enjoying a cigarette.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because tobacco, really, if I were to grow a field of tobacco or I have a barn full of tobacco, am I going to go to jail?
Probably not.
No, sir.
Yeah.
I remember working at the Guelph Lawn Bowling Club where I grew tobacco. I grew like 50 plants, you know, for the production of nicotine for pesticides. Hey, no one called the cops on me. But if I would have planted 50 cannabis plants, I'd be sitting in jail right about now. So, like, where's the trade-off? Are you saying that nicotine is not a dangerous narcotic that should be controlled? And yet here I am, without a license. If I grow tobacco, I'm never going to go to jail. And yet if I grow over 4 plants, guess what? They're going to send me to jail. So, again, the question is it really going towards the concept of legalization, or is it really something else here, Adam?
I don't think you're wrong. The bizarre, to phrase it in a way maybe people will get, it's like, you know, saying you can go to the store and buy one apple at a time, but you can't buy a bushel of apples and take the bushel home. It doesn't...
Well, you can, actually.
You can, but, you know, how many people go to the grocery store and then buy one apple, go home, eat it, and then come back to the store the next day and buy another apple, is what I'm saying.
That's all right, but you know there's some serious questions to be asked here, and that
yeah.
is the fundamental right to cultivate. You know, like shouldn't that be entrenched in the culture? Like, if you've got
right.
seeds of any sort, should you not have that fundamental right? You see, if that was the law in Canada, then it doesn't matter what you grow; it would never be illegal, and you could never go to jail for it. You could have regulations in place. But the idea that you have a fundamental right to grow seeds, you know, God's seeds, whatever seeds you have, I mean, that's a basic fundamental right. That's being quashed by this new act. Of course, the Narcotic Control Act did it. The Controlled Drugs and Substance Act did it. Anyway, there's a lot more to be talked about.
And I want to point out, you have the actual act printed off right here in front of us, too.
That's right, in comparison to the Colorado laws and penalties. And then I checked out what was going on in Holland, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Canada comes out, like, at the very bottom in terms of tolerance. So, like, 14 years for what? After you got 30 grams, you got 14 years in jail for what? For growing a herbal beneficial plant? I mean... Think about that. It's not like you're eliciting in guns or something. It's compare that to tobacco. And so, you know, they come up with all those scenarios. Oh, well, you have to, you know, restrict the pushing or the distribution of cannabis among school kids. Well,
right.
I've never seen that happen. Some guy standing outside the school, you know, dishing out reefers to high school students. This is a make-believe story by the government to justify clampdown
right.
on a vast aspect of the cannabis market, both illicit and legal.
I come back to this, though, that you have, I mentioned Rona Ambrose earlier, and when she was Minister of Health, it was the total Helen Lovejoy thing. You can't even smoke one joint and your life is ruined. You know, it was reefer madness, you know, on steroids. And I can't help but wonder, although I see a lot of your points, I can't help but wonder if this is as harsh as it is in order to stifle the Ronas and the Helens and the reefer madness people who see this as sort of like the beginning of the end of I don't know what, but they have to be harsh like this. It can't be just be a more open system as perhaps you and I would like.
You know, I think it's a handoff to the lawyers, the judges, and the prosecutors, because cannabis offenses make up a great deal of, you know, the guys that go to jail and who have to appear in front of judges. So it's a handoff to them, because let's face it, the guys that are growing illegally and selling it illegally today are, of course, under being hunted down by the police. That isn't going to change with the new act. Okay, so you'll be walking down the street. The only thing that changes is you'll be walking down the street, you'll be smoking a joint, the cops will come. If you got 30 grams or less, you won't get busted. If you got 30 grams or more, let's pray you get a ticket. If you got 50 grams or more, guess what? It's time for a lawyer. So fundamentally, things haven't changed that much. Sure, you can go to the LCBO and buy some marijuana, but what about all the other fundamental issues, fundamental rights? And then we have the issue of, well, how many plants can you grow? Well, they say you can grow 4 plants. Well, if you're living in a dwelling house with a friend, 4 plants per dwelling house is not 4 plants per person. So, okay, well, what happened to my right to grow 4 plants? Well, sorry, you know, it's been taken away because Buddy there, who's your roommate, is also growing 4 plants. So there's a question, a charter issue right there. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and how, you know, can I grow 3 plants and you grow 1 plant if we're for roommates? Or, you know, does it have to be 2 and 2? Or, you know, can we have multiple strains grown in the same bed?
Worse than that, Adam. Suppose you buy seeds off of whoever, and you know the botany of plants, half are males, half are females.
Yeah.
So that means you got half your 4 plants are males. So should you grow 8 plants in order to be left with 4 plants? And then the cops come and they see you're growing 8 plants instead of 4, and you explain to them, no, wait a minute, half of that's going to be males. The cop's going to say, too bad for you. Tell the judge, you're under arrest.
Well, that's funny, because the Canadian Association of Chiefs are saying that they're not going to be ready in time. And I think that's just the pure law enforcement side of it. That is not getting into going into someone's, you know, grow area and being able to identify what is a female and what is a male plant, or what, you know, maybe even what marijuana looks like. How many police could tell you, if you lined up 10 plants side by side, which one is the pot plant?
Yeah, and your plants can't be any bigger than 100 centimeters. So what happens if it's 150 centimeters?
Yeah.
Are you going to get arrested? Or what happens if you grow 4 female plants and these plants each produce 1 kilo of dried marijuana? It's possible. Well, now you're sitting at home with 4 kilos, but the law says you're only allowed to possess 30 grams of marijuana. Cops come in, they see 4 kilos. What's the story? Are you allowed to have the 4 kilos or not? How do you make a distinction? Suppose you're down the street and you're carrying your harvest with you. The cops come, hey, you've got 4 kilos on you. Yeah, but they're my plants. Well, you're only allowed 30 grams, so guess what? You're busted.
And suppose you were taking some to a friend, and then you're saying, well, no, I'm not. This isn't for me, officer. I'm going down the street to see, you know, Mary and Sam, and I'm giving them. And then all of a sudden, you're a drug dealer.
There you go. You see? You see how illegal things really are? You're getting the hang of it.
Well, thank you.
Bill Blair, the narc at work.
So I don't want you to prognosticate the future, but I think it's probably safe to assume this is going to become law.
Yeah, and there's you know, some concern over the kind of marijuana that you will be buying at the LCBO. Mm. In all likelihood, you know, those dispensaries that are now legally licensed to dispense medicinal marijuana, and you get reports about people, you know, their lungs being affected by the pesticides they use. Mm. Well, these same organizations likely will get a contract with the LCBO and provide you with buds that are going to be like, you know, chemically laced and pesticide laced. There's no other way to grow marijuana indoors on a large scale.
No. So what do you think is going to happen? Is this, you know, when this goes into effect, are people going to bend to the, you know, to these stringent rules? You know, you talked about a charter challenge. Is that going to come up right away, do you think?
Well, Justin Trudeau should be more like his dad, you know, and talk with the province. He should have had a provincial constitutional debate about this whole thing. Before it came down the pipeline. And it's not just that issue. I mean, let's have constitutional conference just not on the distribution of cannabis, but what about water rights? What about aboriginal rights? Like, let's throw it all in the pot and have the provinces, the Indians, and the federal government sit down and hash these issues out. It's the 21st century. It's not 1982 anymore. Mm. You know, we've moved beyond the issue. Same with the issue of climate change. That wasn't on Pierre Trudeau's agenda, but it certainly is now. So, you know, I don't hear any of that going on. As for further prognosis, listen, I'll probably be the first guy to run into the LCBO and try some of their bud. Come on, you know. I mean, it's new and it's
don't knock it till you've tried it.
Well, you know, just for the experience of it,
right?
But apart from that, you know, I don't know. I'm going to be looking for outdoor marijuana. Does anybody grow outdoor marijuana anymore? Illegally,
mm-hmm.
because it's not legal to grow it like outdoors. You know, I mean. Currently, if the law passes, you're allowed to grow 4 outdoor plants. Well, okay, it may change, but not the big producers. They have to continue to grow it indoors.
Yeah. What do you think your advocacy is going to look like this time next year? If this goes through as is, we have the LCBO pot, you know, out there, people are getting their personal use. You basically phrase this as this isn't legalization. This is basically a new set of laws that are. Maybe you
it's
know,
a political weapon. It's a political tactic. That's what
these are maybe restrictions. Be incorrect to call this legalization, but it's more restrictions.
Look, you know, Justin Trudeau had to win an election, and he knew that a lot of young people smoke pot. So after he made the promise, he couldn't step back. Mm. So there he is. Now what does he do? Well, like, you know, he gets the narc Bill Blair to work on it because he has a real problem. He can't lie to all these young people. He's got to come through. But he can't
lie again if you think about electoral reform.
Well, so, you know, then he uses this political tool whereby he sort of makes it appear it's legal because it's less than 30 grams. You know, he's done the same thing with climate change. He went over there in Marrakesh and all this, had a big talk. Cap and trade against the provinces. And yet, what does he do? What if you really want to, it's just like the legalization process. It's not really legal, just like he's not really fixing climate change because he's promoting the tar sands. He's promoting the KEYX XL pipeline, all these pipelines, all the oil that is creating climate change. Do you see him backtracking on that? That's where the effort should be, you see? It's camouflage. It's like sugarcoating. It's a mirage. That's what's going on here. Same with the cannabis issue. It's just a mirage. The Trudeau government made cannabis legal. Well, it's not. Far cry from it, my friend.
Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm getting at is what are you know what is left for you as an advocate on this issue? You know, what are you going to do when this goes through? Because you clearly have a point. Clearly, this is unsatisfactory. So where does the fight go from here?
It's a charter challenge, the right to cultivate. And it just doesn't include cannabis seed. It would include all seed. Do people in Canada have the right to cultivate any seed in their possession, may it be herbal seeds for medication, may it be cannabis, could it be opium poppies, peyotes, cochlea. These are all plants, Adam. Mm. And so, humans, common law dictates that you have that fundamental right. And that's where the fight for me is going to be. Because once the court recognizes that we do have a fundamental right to cultivate, then all these issues become quite secondary.
Jagmeet Singh has said all drugs should be decriminalized, enough small amounts for personal use should be decriminalized.
Well, it should be decriminalized. You can have regulations, of course, not the kind that'll throw you in the slammer. that's not right.
But I'm just, are you looking at him as maybe someone who might get it, or is he maybe another politician who's going to go back on it?
Well, I don't know what he means by decriminalization. Does that mean you're never going to jail for growing cannabis?
I think he said it should be decriminalized for small amounts. I think it was an answer to a question. He didn't have a specific policy about it.
But
it got a lot of attention, obviously.
Look, let's face it. The people who have the small amounts have to get it from somewhere. Someone has to grow it. Someone has to distribute it. That's the way it works now.
Mm.
Okay, those people are still being targeted. If you're going to talk about decriminalization, you have to talk about those people. You can't say, well, we're going to put those people in prison. And if you got less than 30 grams, you don't go to prison. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. I think that's a good place where we could all agree that, people who possess small amounts of drugs should not be in prison. I hope that's where we're going with this, although the way we've kind of laid it out here, it feels like this may be creating a whole other new set of problems. Unfortunately, we don't have time to solve those problems.
We can go on, Adam. We can go on.
We could go on after the show, but I do have to close out the show, unfortunately. Brother Case, thank you so much for coming in today and shedding some light on the issue. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Adam, for inviting me.
So coming up on the show, speaking of Jagmeet Singh, I have been negotiating with his media people about getting him to come on. We'll see if that goes. In the meantime, I will have an interesting conversation with a U of G prof, Martin Holland. He's lived in Halifax and Charlottesville, so he knows all about controversial statues. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be on an upcoming show. And I do want to plug this as well, that coming up next month, there is going to be a talk with Amy Goodman at Rosansky Hall. That is on October the 1st at 2 p.m. Scotty Hertz, who will be back in town by then, he will be leading that conversation. This is a co-presentation of CFRU, the University of Guelph College of Arts, the College of Social and Applied Sciences, Astra, OPERC, CSA, SLEF, and Student Service Fee. You can get tickets for it at Ticketfly or the info desk on the first floor of the UC, and then you can get more information about this event on the CFRU website under events. You can find us online at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook at OS_Guelph on Twitter, and get all previous episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. I will be back on CFRU next Wednesday at 8 a.m. for End Credits. That's the movie, news, and review show. And you can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. And if Scotty were here, he could tell you where you can find him. Hopefully you will find him back here in this chair next week, handling the tech stuff, and I can handle the talking stuff, because it is rough handling both at the same time. So we miss Scotty. We look forward to having him back next week. And until then, stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And until next Thursday at 5 p.m., that's it for Open Sources, and we'll see you next week.